I'm Shelley Schlender. This is part two of a recording that Michael Turner did of Grandma Turner on July 10, 1979. Part one contained many adventures of Grandma with her kids growing up, along with the early years when Grandpa Turner was courting her. Grandpa Turner had returned from World War I with a gambling habit. This led him to lose money so often he finally asked Grandma to manage that money. Then one day he got fired from his job and worried that he wouldn't have a penny to his name. Up next, Grandma tells how she used the money that he'd given her to manage in order to save the day.
Because here's $800. What do you mean, mine? Well, I said, don't you see? It says, Lester O'Brien Turner. And I'd been putting it in, and that's what it amounted to, $800. He couldn't believe it. He came in, he said, I can't believe it. How did you do it? Couldn't believe how I'd saved that.
When did you have your first Edwin?
Well, I was already pregnant for Edwin at that time, March. Oh, my land, Grandpa, that's the first thing he wanted. Oh, my goodness, he wanted a son. Quick, quick. In fact, he was so tickled when he found out he was going to have a baby, and he just knew it was going to be a son. And here come Edwin popping along. But here,
how did you decide to have so many kids?
Oh, Grandpa, he wanted every one of them. There wasn't a one that he didn't want. He wanted them.
When did he decide he had enough?
Well, I just couldn't have any more after Dan came one. I couldn't have any more.
How many did you have total, Tim?
Huh?
How many kids did you have? Eight?
Yeah, I had two miscarriages. But anyway, why, Grandpa wanted every one of them. Boy, there wasn't one that he didn't want. He did. What's the matter? He thought, boy, Mommy's safe with the babies at home. He didn't have to worry. But he was a diamond in the rough. Grandpa Turner was a diamond in the rough. Now he just well face it.
What happened during the Depression? Where'd you work? Did he still work on the railroad?
No. What happened? We would have been well fixed. There's where I flew. We built our new house there on Magnolia. Built a new house.
And where?
On Magnolia, down here on Magnolia.
In Newton?
Yeah, here at Newton. We built it. See, Lee was born at Southeast 5th. We go down this street and I look over to where we live, where he right back at Washington School. And he was born there while we were building our house in Magnolia. And then we did most of the work. We just had the place roughed in. Just had it roughed in. We did all the finishing work. We did. And we had full basement there, two bedrooms, living room, dining room, kitchen, nice yard and everything. And anyway, we had that home, and Grandpa decided he'd always had to shovel coal. And on the branches, they were putting in diesel. Now, do you understand what diesel is?
Uh-huh.
So they were putting in oil burners, diesel. I suppose that's what you call it. So he come home one day and he said, well, I'm sorry. He said, I'm going to take a branch job and I won't have to shovel any more coal. And so he said, you're going to have to live here in this lovely home. And I bought this piano. And we had that radio, that over there. He turned that on and we had a lovely home. It was really nice. And he says, you're going to have to stay in this lovely home, and I'm going to have to go out the branch, so you can just live here, you and the kids. And I said, nothing doing. And I said, now what are you going to do? And he said, I'm going to take a branch job. And he said, I'll be home every other night and home weekends. I said, ha, then I'm going right along with you. And he said, what do we do with this place? And I said, sell it. We'll sell it. He said, do you think we can? And I said, we'll sell it. And we put just twice as much as we had in it. We spent $3,000 on it, In those days, that's all we spent. And we sold it for $6,000. Just like that, just sold. And so we packed, we stored our furniture, and out we went. And I think it was either Great Bend or Larner. We had a two-room apartment, and kids and I lived in that two-room apartment. Grandpa was going to be home every other night, all weekends, and that's what I wanted. So that's what we did. And then from there, then we went on out to Dodge City. And Grandpa got a better job out to Dodge City, out on the branch there. So we moved out there and moved in a basement. And it was basement, yeah. It's all we could get at that time. And the rent wasn't very high. It had plenty of room, only it was a basement apartment. And that's when the Honorable A.C. Turner talked Grandpa into buying that 3 acres of land out there on the Fort Dodge Road, 3 acres. And he took our money that we had saved up. We had that $6,000, and he took that $6,000 and bought 3 acres of land out there on Fort Dodge Road. And AC said, oh my goodness, you'll make a fortune out here having a truck farm. He was going to have a truck farm, and it was on the highway and really would sell. So Grandpa bought it. And so then he went to the lumber yard and found out that he could borrow $3,000 on this ground to build a house. So then A.C. Turner, there was all that brick from the old courthouse they were tearing down, you could have for nothing. All it cost just getting it moved. So Grandpa had a whole bunch of that brick moved out there on that 3 acres. And he said, now when you clean all that brick off, then we'll build a house. And so I'd take the kids out and I'd clean brick every day and every day and every day. Finally pile it up. Finally, when it was all cleaned up, where he made his mistake, this lumber yard, he said he would loan him the money to build a house, providing you let me provide the contractor. And I have to get my own contractor. Grandpa said, okay. So got it. He told the lumberman he was ready to build. We had our house all designed out and everything. And so the builders come out and started building them, really, like to this day. But when downstairs, you'd look up from the downstairs, and it just looked like that it was 1,000 feet up. They didn't do it right. Well, and sure, that stairway was really spooky. But anyway, they built the basement and then put the house on it, and termites would come in by the piles in that basement. They were termites, evidently, because they'd just come, you know, marching in. Go down there in the morning, and there was termite or some kind of flying ants or something down that basement. And mice, boy, the mice just come in terrible. And I don't, to this day, know how they ever shut those mice out, those field mice. But anyway, I lived there, and Grandpa worked, and he put in that truck, started to build have the garden, you know. Vision that he was going to sell tomatoes, everything in the world there, you know, to the people going along. And so he gets a whole bunch of tomato plants, and he worked like fury putting those tomato plants in. So Delbert, my brother, come out to visit. See, he was just about 2 years older than Ed. And now I said, boys, I want you to clean out all those weeds out of that tomato patch. When I come home, I want all those weeds cleaned out. Okay, they said. So they worked like little beavers, and I thought that's what they were doing. And when he came home, he says, you know what they done? said they pulled out all the tomatoes. Kept getting worse and worse. And then he decided he was going in the chicken business, Grandma did. So he gets him an incubator, and we took them downstairs bedroom to raise chickens, see? But that, he thought that would be, we made a chicken farm out of it. So the little chickens hatched out. Well, we didn't have a chicken house, so we took that bedroom and put papers down, and there's where the little chickens stayed there in that room, you know, in that bedroom. And we raised chickens, and I want to tell you, then we'd hatch another bunch, and we'd go into the chicken business till we had 3,000 little chickens. Do you believe that? 3,000. So he managed to muster up enough money to build him a chicken house, finally, along in the spring. I helped
What year him. Was that?
Well, I don't know. Don't ask me. Those were years I want to forget. But anyway, we built this long chicken house, and it's, to this day, I bet that chicken house is there. It was a nice one. And Grandpa built that, and I helped him. I'd run the mortar. You know, I'd mix the cement and sand and mix it all together and carry it to him. Then he built it with those a lot of bricks that we got for nothing, don't you see? Those bricks were free. All we had to do was just clean them. And he built an awful nice chicken house. So by the spring, well, then we could turn the chickens out and in this chicken house. And then we put a fence. He put up a fence, and we had chickens there in the fence. So we started in the chicken business. But come to find out, those chickens had to eat. And all the money that he got, and then we had 2 cows. And those time we bought feed for those 2 cows and those chickens, we didn't have any money left to buy anything for ourselves. They were eating up everything, don't you see?
Did you sell the cows or were they milk cows?
Well, no. We had some friends come from the country one Sunday, and they said, "My Dennis said we've got some old hens. We'll trade you for every 2 of your pullets. We'll trade you a hen." And so we said, well, we can take those hens and dress them and take them down to the restaurant and get money to buy feed for the chickens and the cows. So we traded a bunch of those pullets to Olson's, and then they give us the hens. And we dressed them out, and then Grandpa would take them to the restaurant and sell them. Well, it was just buying feed. Always doing is buying feed for the stock and the chickens. We were practically starved. And so it comes summertime, school come out, got out, and by that time Edward had shot out all the windows.
Was Edwin the only one born then?
Oh no, Lee and Edwin and Evelyn. We had the 3, but Edwin was a corker. And he had a BB gun, and he shot out the windows, and we didn't have any money to replace the windows. So I'd have to put stuff in the windows to keep the wind out. But anyway, so then things began getting rougher. And so got to the place where the poor little kids didn't have shoes for their feet. Lee or Evelyn or Edwin. And they were without shoes. Couldn't send them to Sunday school because they didn't have decent clothes to wear. So my brother, Clifford, came out. And he said, well, he said, I can put you in business just in a jiffy. He said, just say the word and I can put you in business. And I said, doing what? He said, making homebrew. And I said, what? He said, I can sell it. You can sell it for $1 a bottle, just like that. And so I thought, boy, anything's better than this. So I said, okay, I'll make a batch of it. And so Clifford, he gets the stuff, and he gets the big old jar, you know, to put it in, and got the bottles, and believe me, I made it. And sure enough, Clifford sold that just like that. And we got our money. Got our money back for what we, what all that cost in just a jiffy. So I proceeded. It wasn't Grandpa, it was me. So Grandpa had a $100 note that he had gotten up, borrowed $100 from the bank.
Was he working on the railroad yet?
No, but he couldn't get a job, and he was out there, and during that depression, because we hadn't lived there long enough, he couldn't get a job anyplace. He couldn't make any money, and so it was just simply, we were just starving. That's all there was to it. We were starving. And then to cap it all off, Grandpa, right in the critical moment, he goes down, his big-hearted Grandpa, to tell the hardware man where they had put in the furnace. He said, well, we can't pay the payments on this furnace. That's all there's to it. It's impossible. So here they come and took the furnace out, left us without heat. Just took the furnace out, left us without heat out there at the old house. And so I had to put a blanket up in my kitchen door, and we just lived in the kitchen. Oh, I tell you, those were hard days. But anyway, this beer come along. And so, believe me, I started in the beer business, making beer, and you know what? It just sold like hotcakes, Mike. It did. And so Grandpa said, he finally got called out on a branch, and he was going to be gone. He was going to be gone for, I think a week or something like that. And he said, well, if I don't pay that note off, they're going to guarantee my wages, and then they'll kick me out. I can't hold a railroad job. If they ever guarantee my wages, I'm done for. So I goes to work and I turn it off. So as the beer was sold, I put the dollars away and make more beer, and they'd come and get it, and they'd give me a dollar for every bottle. Mike, they'd come to the back door and I'd say, we'd like to have 6 bottles of beer. Okay, they'd give me the 6 $1, and they were all $1, 6 $1 bills. I'd give them 6 bottles of beer, and then they'd bring the empties back. They'd bring their empties back, and then I'd refill. That went on and on and on. So the time Grandpa Turner got home, I said, I had that $100 worth of $1 bills. Do you believe that? $100. I'd sold 100 bottles, $100 worth of those dollar bills. And I said, here, you take that down to the bank and pay off that note and pay it off quick. That's what you do with that. Because see, all the money you made, it was paying chicken feed and cows and stuff. We really just couldn't make ends meet. And so we paid off that $100 note just like that. And so then he heard that they were going to raid our place. He said, you better get rid of that stuff because your place has been reported and they're going to raid you and they'll put you in jail. And so Grandpa said, well, we can't do any more of this. And he never in his life ever made a bottle of that beer. It was me. And he always took the blame, but it was me. I did it. I'd do it again if my kids was starving to death. At least we had enough that we got some groceries and I got some shoes for the kids. But anyway.
Was the dust coming in that bad?
What?
Dust was blowing in and everything? Was this Dust Bowl time?
Yeah, well, yeah, it was about that time we had Dust Bowls. But anyway, why, the folks out in Kinsley were starving too. They didn't have anything either. It was terrible times, awful times. But anyway, why, we put that jar away up in the attic and everything, and sure enough, here come the sheriff. I heard a hammering on the door, and he just walked right in. Him and his deputy walked right in. Was going to have us, going to arrest us. Said, we come to this house been reported, and we're going to examine the whole thing. And so they went upstairs and down. He was just about ready to want reelected. He was trying to put a feather in his hat, so what was the matter. But anyway, why, and sure enough, there was no beer. Couldn't find any. But they found just a grandpa. He just got home from work. See, they knew just when he's coming in.
And he had a bottle, just a half a bottle of beer, there in the kitchen sink. And when they come in, he started to pour it down the sink, and they grabbed him, and they took him to jail. Just because they found that half a bottle there in the kitchen sink. Half a bottle of beer.
How long was he in jail?
And, well, so I gets in the car and took the kids, Edwin, Madeline, and Lee, and followed him right in to the jail, to the courthouse. And I says, "What now? Tell me, what shall I do? What shall I do now? I'm not going to stand for this, but what shall I do?" Poor old grandpa hadn't made any beer. It was me anyway. I was the one. And he said, "Well," he said, "there's an old fella." Now, what was his name? Forget what his name was. You go and tell him our predicament. And he's got lots of money, and he might help us. And I went there, and I told him what had happened. He says, "I'll go right with you." And he went right with him, paid grandpa's bail. And that was the end of it. We never heard any more of it. See, that man had no business taking him. It was against the law for him taking, but he was trying to pull a fast one. That one was trying to get to be sheriff, you know. And the record was clear. It was clear on that. But we never made any more beer. That was the end of that. But it was down where we just simply, there was no way to turn. There we had lost all that we had gained. $6,000 just plunked down and lost it.
On poultry and?
Yes, sir, and everything.
Did you ever get rid of the chickens? And?
Oh, no. So he said, "What on earth are we going to do?" And I said, "Well, the folks are out there at Kinsley, out on the sand hills. Grandpa had died. My father had died. And they were out there. Mom was out there with my brothers, and they were starving. They were trying to make ends meet. They didn't have anything to live on. I said, "Let's take our chickens and take her to cows and go out there and move in and live there with them. And we'll just give this old place up. I'm sick of it. I hate it. I despise it. I never want to live here again." So we just walked off, wouldn't you, and left the whole blooming thing. Just walked out and left that house. Hi, that's how we left that place on Fort Dodge Road. So they tell me, they said, "Mom, have you ever been by there?" I said, no, I don't care whether I ever go by there. Boy, it was nothing but misery. And so we packed our things up and took the chickens. It was springtime then, and we just turned them loose, you know. And they could go and get stuff, you know, out in the field, get food. And the cows could pasture out in the grass. And that helped the folks, you see. They had eggs, that give them eggs. And the cows, milk and cream. We had cream, you know. And they had a separator, so we separated the cream and made butter and had our chickens. So all of us survived. By doing that, we survived. And so things went on, and at that time, Mike, I didn't know the Lord. I thought I did. I thought I was a Christian. I belonged to Christian church, and I had some kind of an experience, but I never did.
Was that when Grandpa was getting involved in those other churches?
No, that was later. But anyway, I just didn't put my trust in the Lord, let's say that. And so, anyway, it just got so bad, and living there and Clifford drinking. Grandpa had taken the grapes. We had a grape vineyard, and he got him a keg and made a whole keg of grape juice. He took my wringer and wrung the grapes through and got the juice out through my wringer on my washing machine. And you know it worked. And anyway, he had all that grape juice, and he had a whole keg of grape juice. And some way or other, he got the sugar to put in it, and then he nailed it up tight. And so we took that out to Kinsley, and he buried it out in the sand hills. And he said, "Now I'm going to leave that buried until it gets to be good wine." So evidently, old Clifford saw where he'd buried that keg of grape juice. So the months wore on. That was long, about in, probably in February. And so in the summer, Grandpa decided he'd go out and see if that was any good, you know. Come and here, Clifford had drank it all or done something with it. It was all gone. And we never could figure out how he could get drunk with no money. Well, he evidently got drunk on that wine. And there wasn't a drop of it left. It was gone. Absolutely gone. Oh, that made Grandpa mad. Oh, he beat up Clifford. He really beat him up.
Clifford was his brother or what?
No, Clifford was my brother, my oldest brother, and he was a drunk then, you know. And there he drank all that keg of wine. Well, anyway, it was so bad. It was an awful time there. And so one night, a voice told me. I woke up in the night, and I said, you're going to... I was at the very end of my rope, Mike. But even then, I didn't know it. But I belonged to the Lord. He has his children, and he knows who his children are, and he knew I was one of his. And he says, she's had enough. It's time for a change. And so he said, a voice said to me, woke me up and said, don't worry, your husband's got a job. There's one coming today. So don't you worry. No more. Don't worry anymore. And it looked like there wasn't a job in the world, in the country, no place. And I woke up, Grandpa, and I said, you're going to have a job today. Now, believe it or not, I said, you're going to have a job. And he said, what? I said, a voice told me that you're going to have a job today. Oh, he said, lay over there and go to sleep. There isn't a job in Edwards County. He said, it would be impossible to find a job here in Edwards County. I said, just the same, you're going to have a job today. He said, oh, boy, go on to sleep. Wouldn't even pay attention. That morning, knock come to the door, and a man come to the door, and he said, hello. He said, we're looking for somebody to drive the school bus this fall. And we wondered, you've got the car, you've got a nice car here. Grandpa always kept him a good car. And he had that Chrysler. It was a Chrysler. He said, we'd like to have you drive our school bus for us. There were just, I think it was six kids that we had that had to be picked up and taken into town to school. And he said, we will pay you, I think it was $80 a month if you will take this job. And, of course, Grandpa couldn't believe it. He says, boy, we got a job. And boy, we went to town, and there was the house that we had owned, and Grandpa had sold, traded in on a car. But anyway, it was empty, and we rented it. And the house that we'd owned, there it was right there, and moved in, and boy, we thought, oh, boy, things.
Was this on Magnolia?
No, it was in Kinsley, up on Niles. And so we moved our stuff into town, and we let the folks have a bunch of those chickens. We just give them to the folks. And the cows, we let them have the cows. No, I think we brought one of the cows in. We brought one of the cows in so we'd have our milk and cream. And we brought chickens enough so that we could have our eggs and chickens. And we started up living, really living. That all happened in that one year. Can you believe it? He was just off a year. And that one year, all of that terrible thing happened. But we got moved in, and lo and behold, he got a job at the lumber yard. After that, things just opened up, and we was doing good. And Grandpa got mixed up with that wild bunch of Pentecostal people, which were just wild. They were a wild bunch of people. I knew it. I knew they were phonies. They were screaming. They would scream and holler and carry on, really, till way in almost morning. And Grandpa fell for that. He believed it. And I never in my life ever saw him do anything like that. That's why when I saw Steve get mixed up in this deal,
school, I thought, oh dear, another grandpa. That's what I was afraid of. I was really worried about Steve to see if everything's worked out. But anyway, grandpa got in fanaticism.
He did.
And it was terrible. But in spite of the fanaticism, I found the reality in the Lord. I found him myself.
Did you have a radio back then? Huh? Did you guys listen to FDR on the radio? You did?
Uh-uh.
Did you have one?
No, not then.
When did you get one?
Well, I don't know about that. I think we had so much trouble and everything. We just
after never... Dan came.
Yeah, then Dad got a job. You see, then he got back on the railroad, and then when he got back on the railroad, here come right on up here, Newton. And so we had that little house, and it was pretty nice. I had an old cook stove, and here come his brother again. Well, anyway, we moved in there, and we decided we'd buy that house back again. And so we bought it back, and I guess we didn't, and that was before that. But old A.C. Turner come, and he would be there, and we'd have to feed him and take care of him. Oh, boy. He was an old skinflint, and he took advantage of his brother. But anyway, we lived there until we had an old cook stove, I know that. And so Grandpa come on back up here to Newton. He was called back on the extra board. That left me at Kinsley. And so I thought, well, I'm coming back with him. Believe me. If he comes back, I'll come back. So we rented Southeast Fifth. And that's when...
Dan came along. When Dan...
No.
We had Dan?
You know, there's a space there that I don't know what happened. I know he come back on the railroad, and then we moved back here with Edmund and Evelyn and Lee. Yeah, that was there on Southeast 3rd. We rented that house. We rented the house down the street. That's what we did. We rented that house down the street on Allison, and I liked it. It was really nice. And I was pregnant for Dan. And when Grandpa got back on the road, and he said, Grandpa said, I'll never buy another house as long as I live. I never will try to buy any more property. Well, that was against my rule because I had to have a home. I'm one person that has to have a home like I do. It scared me to be without a home. Great man, it did. I felt a loner, lost without a home of my own. And so he said, and so one evening we'd taken a little walk down the street, and we walked by that 201 Southeast 3rd, and it was an old, picky house. But he said, you know, now here's a corner that would really be pretty to build a home here on this corner. It would really show up. He said, boy, would I love to have this. He made that statement, and that's all he made. And he went on to work. And so I called a real estate man and asked him if he knew who handled that house because it was empty. And he said the children's home owned it. So I called out to the children's home. There I was, great big with Dan. And there was my darling Edmund and Evelyn and Lee around me. And here come that real estate man, or that children's home head, you know. Knocked at the door, and he sat down, and he said, I told him that we'd like to buy that corner. How much would it cost to buy that corner? Well, sir, he said, I believe we could sell that to you, he said, for $1,200. $1,200. And I said, well, could we live in the house? And he said, yes, he said, yes, he said, you can live in it. Sure. Of course you can. And so I thought, well, there we were paying, you know, rent there where we're living. So I said, well, we'll take it. I said, we will take it right then. I said, we will buy that corner. I said, providing you'll let us just pay it down by $100 a month. $100 a month, because that's what we was paying for rent. And I thought, well, we can pay it on towards that house on the corner just as well as we can be paying here in Allison. And so that, and I took it that way. And so when Grandpa come home, he went out there and signed everything, and the place was ours. And we moved in there, 201 Southeast 3rd, and that's how we moved. And it was an empty house. And so it looked like it was hopeless, because there was a door that went down into that old cellar, and the mice were thick. Oh, they were thick. And so I just went to work and boarded up that door, you know, stopped up the holes and everything, and we weren't bothered with mice.
Is that when you got Tipper?
Yeah, we had Kipper pretty soon after that. But anyway, we boarded that up and didn't even, just ignored that cellar. And we had a pretty nice little home out of it. And had the boys' room and the girls' room, and we were downstairs. And so we lived there, and finally we got enough money so that Grandpa said, well, he said, I've got enough money to build a basement. So we said, well, we'll just build the basement and just keep living here and get that all taken care of. And then when we get that all taken care of, then we'll build the rest of the house. That's the way we did it. And when Dan was born, why, Grandpa was, we were just, you know, just living there in that house. It was. But from then on, things began looking up. And we begin to have better times. That's why I look at all of you and I think, oh, I remember about all that stuff, and it scares me. I want you, and seeing you just flip your money off. Boy, you got to use your head, honey.
Was Dan the last one you had? Last kid?
Dan was the last. And so what was funny, I never went to the hospital with any of the children, ever. And when Dan was born, why, I had to go to the hospital. We couldn't get anybody to come and stay. They said we had too many kids. And we just moved up here, you know, a little while. And that old Pentecostal bunch, they said at Kinsley, oh, don't worry, those Pentecostal people will take care of you. Ha! The one of them would come. They said, no, you got too many kids. We're not going to come and work our heads off out there. So it was up to Grandpa to take care of them, Edwin, Ellen, and Lee. And so I went to so I said, well, I'll go to the hospital. And I went to old Dr. Myers, and he said, Maya, I never take anybody before and examine them and see everything. I've never did this before. But he says, you're on the spot, aren't you? And I said, yes, I am. There's nobody to take care of me. He said, well, I'll do it. And so that's how Dan. And so we went to the hospital one evening, and boy, it was really rough. But out of the whole deal, here come our Dan. Wasn't it worth it?
Mm-hmm.
Now we got Dan, Benny, Lynn. Dan and Betty and Lee and Lynn and Emma. Lee was the middle one, and he was kind of a loner, because there was several years difference between Lee and Betty and Lee and Edwin. Did you know that? There was 7 years. Let's see, Edwin was born in 21, and Edwin was born in 27. And Evelyn was born in 23. Edwin was born in 21. Then Evelyn come along in 1923. Then from 23 to 27, by then Lee was born. And then from 27 to 33, here come Betty. And then 3 years later, here come Dan. 36. That's how they come.
It was hot that summer, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. In 36.
Yeah. But oh, that Dan was a doll. He was a doll. He was best little boy you could ever ask for growing up. He was. He was just a darling. Whether it was because Cheryl didn't come, you know, Evelyn was working, and so I took care of Cheryl and kind of, they made company for each other, see. So it was just, I don't remember any trouble after that. It was just smooth sailing. Right then, now, though I was going to tell you, though, out there at Kinsley, when that voice told me, and Mike, it did, said that Grandpa was going to have a job. And just as definite as could be, and still, I didn't pay attention to it after that. Didn't pay attention. Forgot all about it. Forgot all about that experience. Isn't that funny how people go along and forget? I forgot that a spirit had told me that Grandpa was going to have a job, and it was the Lord that got him the job. It was. Nobody else. But I forgot all about that. Boy, we were just going to go on and have a happy time. But he got mixed up then in that Pentecostal. But a result of the whole thing, I'd go there and I'd listen to them. And I knew that they were putting on phony. And so I decided that I would get busy and start reading my Bible and see what it was all about. First time I ever did. And I started reading, and then I would pray earnestly by myself and ask the Lord. And so one night, I was awake. I laid down to go to bed, and I saw a fountain of living water. A fountain, and it was just like an artesian well, and it was hands and eyes. I saw dark eyes standing over that fountain, and it was pouring down. And I didn't even know that there was any such thing as that in the Bible. I never knew it. And so the next time we went to that church, I asked that woman evangelist, I told her what I'd seen, and she said, "Oh," she said, "that's just scripture." She thought it was phony, don't you see? And she couldn't believe that it was something, and I didn't even know it was in the Bible. She thought I was just repeating some scripture, see? And sure enough, it says, "Fountains of living water flowing from the throne of God," and that's right in the Bible. And I saw that. Well, then when I saw that, I began to realize that there was something more. There was something real. I began to looking back at my life and all, and I began to realize that there was a reality. And I thought, well, maybe those folks have got something to scream and holler about, because, you know, maybe they've got deeper. So I started in studying and seeking, and in spite of all of that foolishness went on, I found the reality. Never in my life did I ever feel like being a spectacle. God never puts anybody as a spectacle, ever.
Were you just starting to teach when that Belgian guy, was it Belgium? Or
what?
The Prince of Belgium? Or?
Well, that was when I was teaching. The Prince of Belgium come out and he's the mother and father. And they were on a special train. See, in those days, they'd run those special trains. Mm-hmm. And so at Roselle, see, I had to come by Roselle to get to Newton. And so I just, and they were, the agent was watching for me. And he come running over and he said, "Eva," he said, "that the Prince of Belgium and his mother and father are out there. And I looked over and they were out in the vestibule of the train. And said they want to meet a school teacher from Kansas. So she said, "Come on over." Well, your Grandpa Turner was in the Navy then. And I fell in love with Grandpa Turner. And I'm a person, when I love somebody, I love them. Boy, there's no ifs about it. And I loved him. And I said, well, I thought a minute. And I said, well, you just tell him to come on over here. I'm on this horse. And I had a clock around my neck. Alarm clock and books, you know, had the hands full. And I thought, well, it'd be easier for them to get come down that vestibule and walk on over to where I was, rather than me to get off that horse and have the agent have to hold the horse while I went over there. And I said, you tell them I'll wait right here if they want to come over and meet me. I'll be happy to meet them. Do you realize who you're talking about? This is the Prince of Belgium and the mother and his mother and father. Well, I said, I don't care if he's the King of England. It's the way I feel. I said, you go tell him. And if they want to do it, I'll wait right here. So he went back over there and they wouldn't do it.
Is that how you got in Who's Who?
Huh?
Is that how you got in Who's Who?
That's how I got in Who's Who. And so here come the papers out that stopped and talked to Eva Turner, school teacher. It was the biggest lie that ever was.
They said that he actually stopped, but he didn't stop and talk to you.
I didn't get off my horse and go over there and talk to him.
They lied.
No. To me, we're back here. And this agent said, why, you might become the princess's wife. He might fall for you. I said, oh, please. And I just ignored it. And then they made that big old spiel of paper. I suppose in the library you could find that. Yeah, Lee has the Who's Who book, and that's how I got in. But it couldn't have been anything else than that. But I've had kind of a colorful life of that, haven't I?
Uh-huh.
I am. But,
you saw the Wright Brothers plane, didn't you? You saw the Wright Brothers plane, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw the Wright Brothers plane. Now, somebody said that I didn't, but I know I did. Because we had always had an Old Settlers picnic every year. Every summer, we'd have an Old Settlers picnic. And everybody turned out to it, but they had this fenced in. They had this Wright Brothers plane fenced in. And all you could do is look at, you know, you couldn't get too close to it. You had to be quite a ways away, and sure I did.
Did they fly it?
No, it was just roped in, and they're on exhibition there at the Old Settlers Picnic.
When did you first see a plane fly?
Well, I don't remember that, but I know the first plane I ever took. I was living on Magnolia, and one of Grandpa's old buddies, Navy buddies, come along, and he had a private plane. His own. Now, here's the many thing. I'll tell you, Grandpa, he was a corker when you stop and think about it. But anyway, here he come, his buddy, with this plane, see. And so we goes out so that Grandpa could take and fly with his buddy. So he took him over to Halstead and back. And then Edwin. Oh, he wanted to ride in that airplane. Oh, he just began crying. He said, I want to ride in it. Because, see, Edmund always did want to fly. So, Grandpa said, okay. And his buddy said, sure, I'll take him. So he puts Edmund in the seat by the... There we were right in the open. He was right out in the open. There was no cover. You just sitting there out in the open. And he put him in the seat.
It was a biplane then?
Whatever it was a plane that didn't have a cover. Now, what were they?
They had two wings. It was a biplane.
Yeah.
Then. Biplane.
Yeah. And so Edmund gets in, and he goes over to Halstead and back. And, oh, he was so happy. He thought that was the most wonderful trip that ever was. So this old buddy said, all right, Miss Turner, now you come on. I'll take you. And I thought, well, if Grandpa and Edmund can ride in it, I will too. So I gets in, and he took me clear over to Halstead and back. Oh, and I remember when I got back and I got my feet back on earth, I never felt the earth feel so good as it did. There he was out in the open air flying. And we made it safe. We got back safe. Some of the nuttiest things we've done, I tell you. Really, when I stop and think about how in the world did I ever survive?
Like going out in the, what lake was that in Seattle?
Lake Washington with John. why it's a wonder we didn't get killed. And I do know that the night that we went out in the ocean, we were 15 miles out in the ocean that night, really. And we left our darling kids and their kids up on with all the stuff. They were just going to stay there. We was going to be back, you know, in just a few minutes. And lo and behold, John took us out 15 miles out in the ocean. And we got out there, and I was the only one. I wouldn't even get in his boat without a life jacket. So he produced a life jacket for me. And I was the only one that had a life jacket on. And we got out there, way out, and boy, the fog came in, and those big waves. And John says, we're 15 miles out in the ocean now. Well, I said, boy, if this boat tips over, I'll be the only one safe. I'm the only one that's got a life jacket on. And he said, are you kidding? He said, you couldn't even survive with that out this far out. Don't make any difference whether you got a life jacket or not out here. And so he turned around and come on back.
Is that when you fell in?
Huh?
Is that when you fell in?
No, that wasn't that time. So, anyway, well, he got back and they jumped out of that boat, and that was another time that Grandpa should have watched to help me get out of that boat. But they jumped out, and if my foot had slipped just a little, I'd have went under the boat and been gone forever. But Lord was with me, and I made it, and we got back to the kids. Well, no, then after that, then we went over to his cabin, and he said, now I'm going to take you a real ride here on the lake. It was just the lake, you know, supposed to be quiet. And it was quiet, that lake was. But old John proceeded to want to scare me. And he made that thing go just as fast as he could. Then he whisked around. And he'd say, are you scared? Well, I said, no, your life's in here too. So if you kill me, you'll kill yourself. So I'm not scared. And I was scared to death, but that's the way I talked to John. And John would have liked married me after Grandpa died too, John Turner. I didn't like A.C. Turner. Didn't like
did
him.
Did Dan get to go to San Francisco with you?
I don't know where he is.
Did Dan get to go to San Francisco out on the pier?
Huh?
Was Dan in San Francisco when he went out on that little pier?
Yeah. But anyway, so then we drove in, and I thought, oh, if I ever get out of this boat, they'll never get me in a boat again, ever. As long as I live. So he says, okay, you can bring her in. And he gets out and left me to her in. And so I headed for where the folks were, you know, on the bank. And I thought, well, here I am. I'm here. I can make it now. And I jumped out of that boat, and I looked down, and the water didn't look white. It just looked like it was about that deep. And it jumped out. And then John hollered, he said, wait a minute, that's too deep, don't jump out. And I thought, pooey to you. And I jumped out, and it was so deep that I pretty much went under. But I never got in that boat again, ever. Well,
did you drive down California?
No, we took the train.
I thought you said that it was foggy there and you were driving along the coast.
Oh, well, no, that was when... when we was in this boat, it turned. The fog came in.
In California, you almost went in the ocean. You were driving along the coast in a car.
Oh, that was when it was just John. John's the one. He was a harebrained. Always was a harebrained.
And Dan went out on that pier.
Oh, that was the most scary thing. And do you know those nutty people that was there? They was having a picnic. See, John had his friends, and Grandpa was sitting there. Boy, he was enjoying it immensely, Grandpa Turner. And I just in a minute, it couldn't have been very long, and I missed Dan. And one of the women said, oh, he's probably in the ocean. So the kids drowned every night. That was her first. I gets up, and I just started walking. And I walked just as straight till I come to a pier, and I saw a little guy. And there was no side rails, nothing. And there was two men out there, way out. You know where they go to fish, I guess. Way out.
And I just walked down that plank, and I was scared to death, because I was scared to death of the water anyway. And there was no rails, and I just kept my eye right on that, my little darling. And I walked just straight down there, and there was Dan, right at the edge. The men were putting stuff in a boat, and Dan was looking over, watching him. He could have fell in. Oh, it was... And so I never said a word, and I just waited, and I walked up, and I just grabbed his arm. I said, honey, come on, let's go back. And he come just back, just as sweet, walked back with me. And I never said anything, I don't think, or neither did he, and we walked back and got back to land, and I'll never let go of him again out here. Dan. But I never did scare him. I never scared him or let him know that he was in a dangerous position. I just merely brought him back. So he come back. But there's something that takes care of things like that. I know when we went to, when we just had Edwin Nevelin, why, Grandpa had come from Oklahoma, and those Okies. I don't even want to go into that. But anyway, we had a good job on East Bay. He was working on the railroad, and he had a pretty good job. But he decided he wanted to go and help his folks pick cotton. He said these folks he knew would need cotton pickers. So he was going to quit. He was going to lay off and go down with him and pick cotton for his mother and father. His mother, it was his mother, said there need cotton pickers down there. And he said, I'm a good cotton picker, so I'm going to lay off and go down. Well, I said, then we'll go along with you. So sure enough, we went with Edwin Neville and I. They were just little tots. Goes down there, and so they give him a sack to hold 200 pounds. Give me a sack to hold 200 pounds. I was supposed to pick cotton too. And then fixed a little tiny sack for Edwin, so, you know, to keep him busy. And little Evelyn was just a little tiny girl then. She was just, my goodness, she was old about, she must not have been over 2 years. Not much more than that. But anyway, I'd bring her along and put her in the cotton wagon, and I'd pick cotton, go up the end of the field back, and then there'd be Evelyn, you know, playing with her toys, and I took care of her that way. But one day, Grandpa's mother said, now, leave Evelyn here with me today. I'd love to have her today, and you go on and pick cotton, and I'll take care of her. So we came back in the evening figuring that she was well taken care of. I figured she wanted her, you know, for the day. And she said, well, we don't know what's happened to her. She said, she's just gone. Said, we tried to find her and said, we just don't know what's happened to her. So it's impossible. And there was a big old forest just on down a ways and big old corn fields. And it looked impossible. And it was in the evening, mind you. And they said, well, we can't do anything till morning. That's all there is to it. And I said, there's been kids lost out there the wolves get them. See, it was a wild country. And I just started walking. And I walked in that cornfield, and you know, I went right down that row in that cornfield. And kept walking, and all at once, I thought, I'll stay here all night if I have to. I'll never go back until I find her. And I walked down that road, and finally I saw a little kid talking alone. And I said, Evelyn. And said, oh, Mommy, I was trying to find you. And there was my Evelyn. And I come and brought her back, and it was getting dark when we got back. But who do you think was helping to find her? The Lord. If you do the very best you can, Mike, then the Lord takes over. I know that. When you've done the very best you can, you have to do all you can. You can't just fold your hands and say,
Lord, now I want this, but you got to do what you can. But I want to tell you, he's always there. He is with me.
Were you teaching when you jumped over that rattlesnake nest?
No, I was just.
Was that when you were a little girl going to school?
I was just a little girl then. We out there. I don't know how the folks could have ever sent me out to herd cattle when I was just a little tiny girl. Wasn't that awful? Put me on a horse, and they were all working in the field. See, and Clifford was helping in the field, evidently. And I was the one that had to herd the cattle. And Claude put me on the old pet, and then I'd take the cattle over up to a place to graze. And it was open country. There wasn't any fences. And all I had to do was keep them in that certain area, you know. And I'd be on my horse. But I was trotting along, and I, all at once, the old pet jumped. And I looked down, and I saw a nest of rattlesnakes. We was going across an alfalfa field. Had I fell out, I'd have been a goner forever. But somehow or other, nobody ever molested us. In those days, you were safe, I guess.
This concludes a recording with Grandma Turner that Michael Turner did on July 10th, 1979. I'm Shelley Schlender. Thanks to Michael for making and saving the original recording.